At the letters for Monday, March 11th, 2024. Arden Zwelling with Ben Nicholson Smith, our producer this week, is once again Show Ali. You hear him on Jay's Talk all year long. Thanks to Show for stepping in for Christian Ryan again this week. And Ben, man, I just saw you a matter of, 45 minutes ago. We were at the Blue Jays complex and we were watching Joey Votto, of all people, in Blue Jays kit, taking BP in Dunedin. I'll just start here. It's kind of surreal, honestly, as somebody who has like grown up watching Joey Votto, followed his career throughout when he was an MVP, obviously building what should be a Hall of Fame resume, playing for the Cincinnati Reds for 17 years. It's just surreal seeing him wear Blue Jays colors here in Dunedin.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. It's really cool and definitely not what I would have expected a few days ago. I mean, I was pretty surprised, I'll be honest, when word trickled out on Friday during that Jays game from Buster Olney that he had agreed to sign with the Jays. I was thinking Texas or maybe the Angels would sign him. I just didn't see it being the Blue Jays because they already have a couple left-handed hitting first basemen. And like at the beginning of the offseason, at the GM meetings when Ross Atkins was singing Votto's praises, I remember saying to Shai at the time, like, I could really see this happening at that point. But that was before they signed a 39-year-old DH. That was before they had Daniel Vogel back in camp. So I was surprised. But, you know, to your point, it's really, really cool.
Yeah, he has entered in with such humility. It's just kind of bizarre to be interviewing, as I said, a future Hall of Famer and hear him saying, I'm a minor leaguer. I'm here to try out for the Toronto Blue Jays. I'm here to compete for a spot. Like, you know, we've both been around, right? And we've seen this sort of arc occur a few times. You know, been around the block veteran with a really impressive career who is well into the back nine, like maybe on the 18th green, comes in on a minor league deal. And often there's certain expectations or there's certain presumptions that carry themselves a certain way. We've seen this happen with Joey Votto. I mean, he really has come in here just like eyes open, mind open. He's taken the number the Blue Jays have assigned him. He's taken the locker amongst the minor leaguers. The first day that he was in camp, I mean, he turned up at the game. I'm sitting in the dugout or in the kind of the camera well, which is essentially in the dugout in Dunedin. And it's like the fourth or fifth inning and Joey Votto walks by me and just sits on the bench. He's not there to watch like Yusei Kikuchi or watch Bo Bichette. Like he's there watching the minor leaguers and he's there like talking to Stuart Baroa and Rafael Lantigua. You know, he really has entered this taking the minor league contract rather literally.
Yeah, he really has. Like I asked him the other day when he was addressing the media for the first time, it's like, what is it about this that kind of makes you think of yourself or talk about yourself like a minor leaguer? And he said, well, I am a minor leaguer. I'm on a minor league deal. Like to present it in any other way would be kind of to deny the reality in front of him. And I'm sure that's also music to the ears of the Blue Jays front office because they don't want, no front office wants someone in there who's kind of blind to the reality of the situation. And Joey Votto, like you said, is arriving here with a lot of humility and saying like, look, you know, I'm willing to ride buses, even expecting to ride buses, because at this point he doesn't have that 40-man roster spot. Now, let's be realistic. This is a guy who has a great major league resume and was a reasonably productive hitter as recently as last year. So I don't think anyone's idea of plan A is for him to be riding buses for more than like 10 days, but it could happen.
I'll believe it when I see it. We'll see. Let's get to the end of March, early April, and see if Joey Votto is really out there wearing a Buffalo Bisons uniform and on that bus to Rochester or wherever they're going. It would be something else to, you know, you imagine a game started by Ricky Tiedemann with Joey Votto in the heart of the order. You know, I'd go watch that, certainly. But yeah, you kind of mentioned like there would have had to have been some pretty open and honest dialogue between the Blue Jays and Votto coming into this, just about like how realistic it is that he actually wears a Blue Jays uniform in the major leagues this year. It is absolutely like a very real possibility that Joey Votto is never a Toronto Blue Jay, never a Toronto Blue Jay in the big leagues in 2024. I guess he is technically a member of the Blue Jays organization right now, but you know, there's absolutely no certainty that he's actually going to be part of the major league roster this year. He is competing for that. He has to show the Blue Jays over the next couple of weeks that he can still compete at the big league level, coming off of two very challenging years in which he battled his health, in which his performance is well below the standard that he set for himself in his career. Like, there's a lot of stars that have to align here. He has to show that he's healthy and productive, and then the Blue Jays have to have a need and a lack of a better option. So we'll see how this all plays out. I do think it is interesting that we haven't really heard from the Blue Jays on this yet. Like, we haven't necessarily heard their perspective on how they're viewing this opportunity for Votto. Like, the narrative has very much been driven by Votto here, and I'm sure the Blue Jays are pleased with the way that he has driven it, but it's not like we've heard Ross Atkins or really even John Schneider come out and say, like, this is how we are viewing Votto, and this is how we are viewing him in this opportunity, and this is what the future could look like for him.
Right, and there are other pieces here where, you know, you hear John Schneider say this doesn't impact Daniel Vogelback, and it's kind of like, well, I mean,
how could it not?
Yeah, it kind of does. They're in that same role, because at the same time, you know, I understand, look, if you're John Schneider, you want the message to Vogelback to be, stay motivated, keep doing your thing, we'll see what happens. Because, you know, Vogelback could end up breaking with this team. Who knows? They might end up needing him. But let's be realistic. There's not room for more than one left-handed pinch hit DH type who's not really going to, you know, necessarily play a position other than first base. In Vogelback's instance, he's not going to play any positions. Votto was trusted by the Reds enough to play 44 starts at first base last year. I think it was either 44 or 45. So he can play the position a little bit, but clearly it's one of those guys or the other. And Spencer Horwitz at this point, he's going AAA to start the season. I mean, that seems pretty clear. But like you say, I mean, we don't know where this is going to lead. I could imagine a scenario where, and I really could imagine this, where Joey Votto is healthy. He had a full offseason to prepare, which he didn't have last offseason. Says he feels great, looks good, hit taking BP for whatever that's worth. I could see him going out there and hitting 15 homers with an .825 OPS for this team. I could. Like, it wouldn't shock me. But at the same time, you know, you look back to Vlad Sr. when he signed with the Blue Jays in 2012. Shout out to the 2012 Blue Jays. That's a team no one, you know, really goes down memory lane with very much. But he signed with the Blue Jays and never played with them. Vlad Guerrero Sr. just spent a bit of time in the minors and it just never happened. So that is the downside possibility here. And that is relatively easy to imagine, too.
Yeah, I do think it is one or the other, Vogelback or Votto. And you look at the terms of both of their deals, and it's $2 million in the big leagues for either of them. It's also kind of hard to envision. I wonder if you see this scenario, but I don't really see it, where like the Blue Jays carry Vogelback for the first month of the season and then decide, oh, you're not it. Cut bait with him and then bring up a Joey Votto in mid-April or May. Like, then you're out $4 million with the Blue Jays being in, you know, somewhat of a tight payroll situation. Like, I don't think that that's a road they'd want to go down. Could you see that scenario playing out?
I don't see it that way. I haven't seen the specifics on their contracts. So, for example, with Vogelback, if there's a way to have him in the majors where you are only paying him for the prorated amount that he's in the majors, then sure, you're just paying him week to week, essentially, no problem. If, as is the case with most minor league deals, once he's in the majors, that triggers the full amount from that point of the season on, then $2 million, I mean, that could be a reliever at the deadline. So I don't see them doing it that way.
The other consideration with Votto is that on a minor league deal, as a player with over 6 years of service time who finished the previous season on a major league roster, he is an XXB free agent. What that means is that he has opt-out dates that are instituted by the CBA. So Votto's going to have an opt-out right before the regular season. He's going to have one on May 1st, and he's also going to have one on June 1st. So again, that is part of the picture here, and obviously something the Blue Jays and Votto and everybody is aware of, but that does play into how the Blue Jays sort of, how some of these roster machinations play out. Like, as it comes to just Votto versus Vogelbach, I think that, look, Votto is somebody who you don't mind hitting against left-handed pitching. So he has that over Vogelbach. You can, you know, Votto is less limited in how you can deploy him because he's not a platoon bat. He's somebody who, you know, you could start against pitchers of either hand. He's also somebody who can play the field more than Vogelbach can. He has a bit more utility in that way. As you said, he can play first base, whereas Vogelbach did not play a defensive inning last season. So he has that going for him. But then the Vogelbach of it all is that he's 9 years younger and he has demonstrated more game power over the last several seasons. And he is somebody who can draw walks at the same clip that the Votto has shown that he can at his best. He's just a bit more limited in how you deploy him. So to me, it's not even really clear like who you would rather have for the Blue Jays this year, like maybe a slight edge to Votto, but I mean, Vogelbach is a guy who they signed for a reason, and he has looked good in spring training games, and he has been a model citizen, and he has gone on long bus rides, and he's been a good teammate. He's been great in the clubhouse. He has a lot of friends on the Blue Jays. So, you know, I don't really know even how to kind of handicap this competition as much as it is one over the next couple of weeks.
If you were to tell me, okay, you have to pick the guy out of these two who's going to have an 870 OPS, then I think Votto is more likely to get there because he's done it his whole career. His career OPS is 920. I mean, this guy's, like you say, he's a Hall of Famer in the making. So I do see a higher ceiling there. But if you said to me, you have to pick the guy who's going to have a 730 OPS, who's just going to be able to give you something, then I would take Vogelbach. And I think that it has to do with his youth. It has to do with what, you know, relatively speaking, you look at aging curves for players. It's no secret. You don't see a lot of 40-year-olds who are successful. So I think Vogelbach maybe has the higher floor, but not quite the same ceiling. So with Votto, it's introducing a certain amount of volatility, which can be a good thing for this team. I mean, they don't need him to go out there and get 600 plate appearances. Obviously, they're not depending on Joey Votto for anything. So it's like, it's something you would see with a lot of minor league deals where, you know what, you'll see what he can do. And maybe he can help you, maybe he can't. But one thing that is kind of interesting is they still talk about Justin Turner as though Justin Turner is basically the DH. So it doesn't seem like this is going to push Justin Turner to play a ton of first base or a ton of third base. It seems as though, you know, whoever it is that breaks camp on this team, whether it is Vogelbach, whether it is Votto, that probably is a part-time DH, part-time pinch hit role.
That's a real veteran team all of a sudden, Ben. Remember when the Blue Jays were this young crew with, there's Vladdy and Bo and Alejandro Kirk and Manoa. And we look around as Turner and Springer and Kiermaier and maybe Joey Votto. And yeah, what Votto is trying to do, I mean, this is exceptionally uncommon to be not only just like a productive big leaguer into your 40s, but even to be one who just plays regularly. Like, you just don't even see guys in their 40s like get up over 200 plate appearances in a season very often. Like, you know, you would have seen Miguel Cabrera do it on his retirement tour, another future Hall of Famer. Albert Pujols had like that crazy year in his retirement year where like he was an all-star with the Cardinals. You was in then another future Hall of Famer in Pujols, but it's just so rare that the players of that age can hang in today's game. But you know, one thing I'll say about Joey Votto that I've learned about him in the last 48 hours, he has a ton of self-belief that he is still very capable of competing at the highest level of baseball. Like, that much is clear to me. He really left me with that impression when we first met him on Sunday.
I may stink, I doubt it, but I was able to fully prepare. This is me at my ready after a strong off season, and we'll see. I'm looking forward to competing.
Here on Monday, I had to interview him again, and I was just like, oh my God, like, how do I come up with something unique to ask this guy? He just held court for like 20 minutes on Sunday in what is the, you know, the avail of camp to this point, right? Like, just gems everywhere, insight, yeah. You know, just incredible like thought and intellect put into every answer. You know, his scrum's at 9 a.m. and he's walking into it at 8:59. I mean, he is there and he's making eye contact and he's shaking everybody's hand. I mean, can't say enough about it. So, you know, I come back on Monday and I'm like, what am I even going to ask this guy that's unique? And I was like, you know, you really did express a lot of confidence yesterday when you talked to us. Like, how do you maintain that self-belief? And he looked me dead in the eye and he said, well, I'm pretty good at this. And I was like, oh, right. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. You're a professional athlete and I am not. And you have an extremely different level of confidence that I will never be able to relate to in my entire life. So look, Joey Votto is very confident that he is healthy and that he is capable of being productive. And we'll see. It's going to be fascinating to watch it play out.
Yeah. And it's cool because it's been documented. And when he says that, you can back it up because baseball is a sport where you can quantify so much. I mean, there's not really a way to quantify who's the best writer in baseball, right? There's no stat for that. And so I can't look at another writer and say, like, I'm way better than them. He can look at his baseball reference or his fan graphs, and yeah, it's there for anyone to see. He is one of the best players of his generation. It's a fact. There is no question that he is incredibly good at this. But it's interesting, too. I mean, speaking of the age, because you know, I have it right here in front of me. In the National League last year, there was one position player older than Joey Votto, and Nelson Cruz has now retired. And in the American League last year, there was one position player older than Justin Turner, and Miguel Cabrera has now retired. So we're talking about the oldest player in the National League and the oldest player in the American League. The Jays might have the two oldest position players in baseball this year on their roster. And so, you know, if you have kind of a lefty-righty Votto-Turner thing, there's a scenario where that works amazing and they just have this amazing season, but you know, who knows? You cannot go into the season banking on that either, because it could be a pair of 680 OP. You just don't know. You don't know.
We're also doing that thing that we say we're not going to do every spring and then do anyway, where we talk about the 26th spot on the roster.
In this case, I mean, come on, we got to do it.
When it's a Hall of Famer, I think that, yeah, it's a little bit different than, we're not spending this much time talking about Ernie Clement, who, by the way, hit a bomb off Corbin Burns yesterday. And you know, I was kind of joking around this morning. I was like, you know, look, when Ernie Clement goes deep off of Corbin Burns, that's because Ernie Clement's figured something out and he's hitting amazing pitching and he's going to have this great year. But when Yusei Kikuchi gives up a grand slam to Jackson Holliday, oh, he was just working on a pitch. That's not a pitch he was going to throw in the regular season. That's spring training for you.
Exactly. I mean, yeah, Jackson Holliday, pretty incredible player. That's exciting for fans of the game because he's just got a great swing and it's really fun to watch. But yeah, I think with Ernie Clement, I actually think he's making the team. So, you know, it's March 11th. I realize that. And now I'm already getting pulled into the rabbit hole. And Ernie, you know, we definitely don't need to go there. But I sort of do think he's making the team.
And he looks better than ever. Uh-oh, fly ball deep left off the bat of Clement. And that's going to get out of here. Ernie Clement with a home run into the bullpen.
He's a big leaguer, and I think he's making the team. Nathan Lucas is a big leaguer, but I don't think he's making the team. And I think that the difference there is Nathan Lucas has options, and Ernie Clement doesn't. And I think that, like, if those two guys are a part of the Washington Nationals organization or the Chicago White Sox organization, like, it's not even a question that those guys are big leaguers and maybe even playing every day. But, you know, with the Blue Jays and some of the veterans, some of the names that they have around the diamond, these are capable bench depth pieces for them. These are guys who will have roles to play, but ultimately, like, optionality is going to come into it, and preserving roster depth is going to come into it at the end of spring. And so, as we've seen time and time again, like, so many of those decisions get made not so much on merit, like when we're talking about opening day rosters, but more so on just preserving depth and not having to expose players to waivers and who has options and who doesn't. Ultimately, front offices look at this as, how do I build the deepest, most flexible roster for the next 6 months, not how do I build the most competitive roster for opening day?
Or how do I give Ben and Arden the best topics to discuss on the podcast? Although, I mean, hey, no complaints on that front so far. I mean, they're giving us a couple narratives here, which is good. But yeah, I think, like, I actually do think that Ernie Clement is a better fit, even setting aside the options for this team, because he can play infield and outfield. And Lucas, I mean, I guess he can play center, but they almost don't need a backup center fielder because you have Varsho and Kiermaier. So I think Clement kind of gives you more positional versatility, which I think can be good. But like you say, I mean, if these guys were on Oakland, Like, I could, Nathan Lucas might be the Oakland A's all-star, you know, and that might still happen. There's still time in camp for some deals to get made.
Ernie Clement was literally on Oakland at this time last year, and they straight up released him.
Wow.
Right? So things can change in a hurry in baseball. You've now been in camp for nearly 2 weeks. Ben, I'm curious what you think that you have learned over the last week that maybe you didn't know a week ago when we talked and you were still kind of fresh in camp. What's kind of rattling around your brain right now, having watched as much Blue Jays baseball as you have?
A lot. I mean, it's a gradual thing, of course, as you know, and I think that it's really just kind of putting it together piece by piece. I'm not sure that there's, you know, like huge earth-shattering stuff. I think that you look at the pitching staff, which, you know, I know we'll probably get to in the next segment, and there's a lot of intrigue there. But on the position player side, like, bringing in a Hall of Famer on a minor league deal has definitely occupied a lot of my thoughts. I think that, you know, Vlad Jr. being, you know, a little bit banged up, that seems pretty minor. Bo Bichette looks good. Varsho looks great. I think Varsho's going to have a big offensive bounce back. He looks, like, really comfortable out there. Yeah, I think they're in a pretty good spot, but, you know, they got some real, real questions at the same time.
Yeah, Varsho's made some adjustments to his swing, trying to, you know, have a bit less of a pop-up percentage and a bit more of a line drive percentage, which is something that every player wants to do, but certainly Varsho, looking back at his results last year and even just his process, just saw himself being just way too under the ball, way too jumpy at the plate. You might remember him, like, pulling some foul balls, like, ridiculously, like, even like foul balls that went into the 500 level almost behind him at Rogers Center. So, you know, that just kind of told him that he was a bit sped up, and you know, I think he put a lot of pressure on himself last year. I think he really wanted to show up with a new team and to really sort of fulfill the expectations that were put on him. So I do agree with you. I think he's gonna be a lot better in his second year with the Blue Jays. Like, when you look at kind of the quote-unquote bounce-back candidates, whether it's Vlad, whether it's Varsho, Kirk, Springer, you know, I think the Varsho is probably your best bet there. And I think that also Alejandro Kirk just looks really comfortable this spring, and I think that his bat path looks good. He looks on time. It looks like he's just in rhythm at the plate, maybe not thinking so much mechanically and not worrying so much about you know, what he's doing with his hands and with his elbow and with his lower half and syncing everything up. Like, just kind of talking to some people, they feel like he's just gotten back to that kind of natural athleticism. And I know that people feel a certain way when you mention athleticism with Alejandro Kirk, but he really is like a really good athlete, and body composition really doesn't tell you anything about athleticism and function. I do think that, you know, the Blue Jays are really encouraged by the swings that Kirk's taking and where he's at. So that's another player who I think has a pretty strong chance to have better offensive numbers in 2024 than he had in 2023.
Yeah, he's a very coordinated dude, that's for sure. No questioning the hand-eye with Kirk. Yeah, it's interesting too, because, you know, you look at this time of spring, right? And depending on the year, this can be the time of spring where you start talking about a prospect coming up where it's like, this guy is ready. Like, he is one injury away. He is on the brink. And I'll be honest with you, like, I've had my eyes open here, and you see these guys for a few innings at a time, and you talk to people, and, you know, tell me in a second if you disagree with me here, but, you know, I don't get the sense that Aurelvis or Barger or even Tiedemann, I don't think these guys are on the brink. I don't think that they are around the corner from, like, one injury away a week into the season, like, oh, okay, you have Bo Bichette pulls a hamstring, like, okay, it's time to... or, you know, maybe Bo's the wrong example. Well, let's say, you know, you have Kiner Falefa pulls a hamstring. Here we go. It's time for Barger. Like, I think that these guys are a little further away, and that's not ideal. Good teams have good prospects come up and fill in, and maybe that happens midway through the season. I don't get the sense that that is right around the corner.
The one name that comes to mind is Alan Rodon. Like, that's someone who the Blue Jays like a great deal. He's someone who is extremely, like, intelligent, like, really thinks the game on a really high level. And the Blue Jays have a lot of faith in him to have a plan at the plate and make adjustments and to get the most out of his skills. He has, like, some very, very real bat-to-ball ability, like, borderline elite, and the Blue Jays have been doing some things with him to just try to get some more power. I feel like he's actually a really strong dude. Like, he just hasn't been able to kind of tap into that game power just yet, but with his barrel accuracy or barrel control, whatever you want to call it, with the way that he gets the bat to the ball. Like, the Blue Jays really do believe there's a lot of room there to make gains. And people who really watch prospects will notice that he has changed his swing like pretty dramatically. It's something that he worked on at Driveline over the offseason. And, you know, he's feeling, I think, a lot more confident with this new approach, this new swing, and his ability to kind of get some more power out of it. So, like, he's somebody who could be, you know, someone to watch on that position player side, is someone who could very quietly be coming towards the big leagues. And then, you know, on the pitching side, like, obviously Tiedemann kind of goes without saying. Like, he just needs to get innings. He just needs to be healthy and throwing regularly. We saw him in his first spring outing the other day, and the stuff speaks for itself, right? Like, fastball up to 98, struck out a couple dudes at the slider, but also yanked a couple sliders and also missed some of those fastballs arm side, and also fell behind some hitters that you really ought not to fall behind, such as Nick Castellanos, who took him deep. Because it doesn't matter how electric your stuff is, if you let Nick Castellanos get 2-0, or Bryce Harper, Trey Turner, like some of those other names that he was facing, like, they will do damage against really good stuff if you give them count leverage. It's not really the same thing as when you fall behind, you know, whoever the 20-year-old is at Double-A that you're facing, and then you can just kind of overwhelm them or outstuff them to get yourself back into a count. Against hitters at the big league level, they take chances, they take shots, like, they really utilize count leverage. So I do think that just strike one and working ahead more often is just going to be a huge focus for Tiedemann going forward.
And Schwarber almost took him deep, first batter of the game that day as well. So, you know, to his credit, he struck out Realmuto, he struck out Stott. That is a tough assignment. I think it was a successful one for Tiedemann to go in there, just given that he had been battling the knee hamstring issue, and then, you know, comes out debuting on the road against the Phillies. Tough assignment. You know, there are some positives, there are some negatives, but all of it to say, he looks like a pitching prospect to me, in the sense that there's so much promise and there's still things to work on. And that's what you'd expect. That's exactly where he should be for this point in his career. Not a surprise that he would still have things to work on. And, you know, sometimes he might throw a non-competitive pitch where it's just a ball out of the hand. And if you do that 5 times in an 85 or 90 pitch outing, that's probably fine. If you do that 15 times, you can't do it. You're wasting too much. You're not being efficient enough with your energy. So, you know, I do think that there are some things for him to refine, again, as you would expect, but it kind of contributes to me saying, like, I don't think this guy is, like, knocking on the door, and this is why, you know, when we get to the rotation discussion, Tiedemann's not really in it, because he is someone who needs to go to the minor leagues and continue just finding ways to throw strikes with all of his pitches in all counts.
I will give you one dark horse sleeper before we take the break, just since we're talking prospects. Mason Fluharty is someone who to keep an eye on as a lefty reliever coming out of college. He's in big league camp. You know, those college relievers can move very quickly up the system, and, like, he has some very real stuff. It's not necessarily, like, kind of loud stuff in the way that, like, Connor Cook's stuff is really loud, but it is probably, as someone put it to me, like, the most unique pitch profile that the Blue Jays have. He releases from this weird sort of three quarters arm slot from the left side, and he throws, like, this upshoot cutter with a slider off of it that breaks a foot. It's a very sweeperish slider, but, I mean, these pitches just move a ton. They are incredibly uncomfortable to face for a left-handed hitter, and he uses them pretty effectively against righties as well. Like, he's kind of telling me, look, against lefties, I want to strike out every lefty that I can. Against righties, I'm going to, you know, backdoor them with cutters. I'm going to pick that outside corner, and then I'm going to break their bats. Like, I'm going to take the bat right out of their hands. And we've seen him do that a few times in this camp. Like, he's looked really impressive in his outings. So the Blue Jays actually have, like, pretty good left-handed relief depth when you look at Tim Mayza, obviously, and then Yanisis Cabrera and Brendan Little, who I think everyone knows by now. Like, I think is a dude, and I think is somebody who is going to be effective at the big league level this year and pitch some innings for the Blue Jays. But beyond that, I do think that Mason Fluharty is a dark horse sleeper to keep an eye on, who could be a factor in a big league bullpen maybe sooner than people realize.
Nice. A deep cut. I like it. That is that's definitely a springtime right, probably, to go down deep into the system and find someone. But hey, he was a Double-A last year, so maybe he's actually not that deep of a cut. And like you say, someone to keep an eye on as we move ahead here.
Yeah, that's one for the Uber dorks. We're going to step away. But when we continue, we got to talk about actual legitimate big league pitchers who have thrown major league innings and who the Blue Jays are counting on to throw major league innings for them this year. All that and so much more when we continue on At The Letters.
Listen to At The Letters ad-free on Amazon Music, included with Prime.
It continues on At The Letters, Arden Zwelling and Ben Nicholson Smith. Thanks to our producer this week, Show Ali Ben. The Blue Jays are getting to that point in camp where they really have to make some decisions. And let's be honest, a lot of those decisions have already been made. And we can start with the starting rotation. Kevin Gausman and Alek Manoah, a couple of guys who we have not yet seen in Grapefruit League play due to some shoulder issues that they experienced as they were building up. Kevin Gausman has since been back off a mound. Alek Manoah has not, and the Blue Jays have not said as much. They haven't announced this. This is not official, but I feel pretty confident in suggesting that Alek Manoah is going to open the season on the injured list, and there is officially an opening in the Blue Jays rotation.
Yeah, at this point, it does not seem possible for him to ramp up quickly enough. And with Gausman, too, I think there is a path for him to open as the maybe fifth starter out of the gate if everything goes well. That path exists. But if there is even one blip with Gausman, then you're looking at starting with two gaps in the starting rotation. So it hasn't actually been that long since we last recorded ATL, and yet I do think with each passing day we do get more clarity, just because the calendar dictates how much these guys can build up and how quickly it can happen. And yeah, to your point on Manoah, it's just not going to be enough time for him to ramp up. And he clearly, setting aside the time, he has not felt good enough to get off a mound. So there is some more healing or rest or something that is going to be required there before he can even get to the point that he's really accelerating that ramp up.
Yeah, it sucks for him, obviously, because like he battled some shoulder stuff last year, which you know, clearly he feels was behind some of the results that he had last year. And I misspoke earlier. I forgot about this. Like Alek Manoah actually was like in a Grapefruit League game.
That's right.
He was in one of the first ones when it was out in, I think he went to Lakeland, right? Yeah, to pitch against the Tigers. It was like, I don't know, spring training just like warps your entire concept of time.
In space.
In space, yeah, no, totally. Florida warps your concept of space.
It's just like a megalopolis, right? There's no defined end or start to these cities. You just keep going and going, and it still kind of feels the same wherever you are.
Yeah, they all look the same, and they're all, we'll leave it at that. But so spring training kind of warps your sense of time. So like, I don't know, you could tell me that Manoah start was last week. You could tell me it was 3 weeks ago. I don't know. I'd believe you. could have been any time. But yeah, he actually was off the mound in a game and he threw like 96 in that outing and he hit some dudes as well. But, you know, that was supposed to be the beginning of, the comeback and of him like trying to put 2023 behind him and trying to get back to the dude who he was in 2022. And, you know, those pursuits have obviously been significantly derailed. He was actually scheduled to throw again. Like he was scheduled to make his second start in Fort Myers. And this is all coming back to me now. And then he was scratched from that start. So neither here nor there. Like this is obviously dispiriting news for Manoah, and you can ask Mitch White like just how difficult it is to start the season with a shoulder injury and try to pitch through it and try to get it to a place where you feel like you can be comfortable and effective on the mound. So we'll see how long this takes for Manoah and what that process looks like, particularly coming off of the shoulder issues that he battled last season. With Gausman, he is pretty confident that he's going to be ready for the start of the season. We'll see. I mean, it's certainly not going to be opening day. Like maybe you could see him on day four of the regular season or day five, My official prediction, by the way, is that Jose Berríos is going to be the opening day starter. That's yeah. who I feel it's going to be. But so maybe he's ready for that. But like, we still need to see him in a game facing hitters. Like, we still need to see him getting built up. You got 2.5 weeks left, and the Blue Jays are actually talking about like Gausman having another side session, like a 2-up side session, or maybe like a live BP setting where he's really gonna cut it loose. Sounds like that last bullpen that he threw was kind of more touch and feel, just like slowly getting back used to being on the mound and testing out the shoulder. So it really is no guarantee either that Gausman's gonna be ready for the beginning of the regular season. Like, it's gonna be something we're gonna have to monitor here over the rest of this week.
It's like you're trying to build momentum, right? You're trying to get this thing rolling, and with the touch and feel bullpen, it's like that initial stage. And if he goes out there next time and he's really getting after it, then you start to roll that thing down the hill. And then he goes maybe 3 innings in a game, four or five innings. Maybe he's good to go at that point. He says he wants to get up to about 75 pitches in a game setting a couple times before, or in a simulated setting that doesn't count, a couple times before getting into a regular season game. So in theory, that could be very end of March, beginning of April, as we record this on March the 11th, but we'll see. And as for Manoah, it's kind of funny when you bring up the scratch on the 3rd of March. We're recording this on the 11th. It's only 8 days ago, but to me, at least, it feels like longer ago. And when you think about it, all right, he gets scratched, he needs a week. Like, you know, that's part of baseball. Sometimes pitchers need a week or two to get over things. Now, because of how last season unfolded, I think everyone involved is a little bit more cautious and holding their breath a little bit more because it's harder to predict. But if this were any other pitcher and he needs a week, it wouldn't be good news, and it certainly would give the Blue Jays trouble for the beginning of the regular season. But, you know, sometimes pitchers need breaks, and the optimistic reading of this situation would be, hey, Manoah, you know, needs a couple weeks, but maybe he's ready to join the team by the end of April.
It's certainly a good thing that the Blue Jays have built out a bit more starting pitching depth, I'll tell you that much. Because, you know, we're seeing Bowden Francis in starts, like, pitching into, you know, up to 96, 97 and showing that curveball that he has, obviously. You know, he's trying to get a handle on that splitter that he's featuring. It is such a difficult pitch to master. It's such a frustrating pitch, such a tough pitch to trust, because it really does just, you know, with most pitches, you think about it, you're really like you're throwing it from a seam, and with a splitter, a lot of the times you're not throwing it from a seam, you're throwing it from the white of the ball because you don't want it to spin that much, and you just kind of slips out of your hand. So it's really hard to kind of trust and be confident that you're going to locate that thing and you're not going to leave it up and Kyle Schwarber's going to hit it 2 million miles. So there's a reason why very few guys throw splitters consistently and throw them effectively. The Blue Jays have two of them on their staff, and now they've got guys in Francis and Nate Pearson who are trying to add them to their arsenal. So my original point is that, you know, it's very good. The Blue Jays have Bowden Francis looking strong here in camp, and he battled some adversity his last time out, didn't really have a feel for his fastball, and was able to find a way out of it. And look, it's only spring training, and maybe in the regular season, like, that speeds up, and when batters are more locked in, or you're just facing a higher overall degree of competition, like if it's the Yankees in the Bronx, like maybe that goes differently. But I do think it was a positive that Francis was able to put that outing back on the rails and work his way out of some adversity. There's also Mitch White, we've mentioned, is up to 98, which is a positive. Certainly needs to do a better job of having his secondary stuff carry the zone. But if he's your number five to break the season and, you know, kind of a two trips through guy, it's not the worst thing in the world. It's better than the options the Blue Jays had breaking camp at this time last year. So they can feel okay about that. But if they have to go any further beyond those two, you very quickly get into Wes Parsons territory and Paolo Espino territory, and really quite uncomfortable territory if you're the Blue Jays.
Yeah, no one wants to see this pushed any further. I mean, even if it is Bowden Francis and Mitch White in those 4 or 5 spots, well, your bullpen is going to be impacted there too, and that would create an opening. Maybe that means a Nate Pearson, maybe it's a Brendan Little. Zach Pop has been mentioned too. You know, the bullpen would take hits depth-wise. And also, realistically, on the days that Mitch White starts, you probably want to have arrested Trevor Richards available, right? Like, you probably want to have your bullpen reasonably fresh on those days. So it creates an overall impact on the pitching staff. But I think with Francis, yeah, like you're really happy with that. He looks like a major league starting pitcher. We've talked about it for a few weeks now on ATL. This guy is deserving of the opportunity and he's ready for it. Like I think that he can get outs at this level and do it consistently. So that's a fine spot to be. But, you know, at this point, if you had to guess, like, would you say it's probably Francis and White who both get shots? Because I think it's definitely Francis. And I almost think it's like 50-50 whether Gausman's going to be ready for that first turn.
Yeah, I just need to know how the rest of this week plays out with Gausman. It's Monday, March 11th, and yeah, he didn't throw off a mound here today. We're going to need to see him throw off a mound in the coming days and just see what shape that takes and how quickly he can get into games and how quickly he can get up to the 75 pitches that he wants to be at before he makes his first start of the regular season. It wouldn't surprise me if he needed some IL time to start the year and you backdate it, and maybe it only means, like, you know, Mitch White has to take a turn or two in the rotation. I mean, you're at that point, you're obviously like prioritizing the health and long-term effectiveness of Kevin Gausman and you know, throwing Mitch White in those starts. But I mean, Gausman's really motivated to be ready for the start of the season. He says he believes he'll be ready for the start of the season. We'll see. You know, I could definitely foresee a situation, like a scenario where, like, the first turn of the Blue Jays rotation goes Berríos, Bassett, Kikuchi, Francis, White. Like, that is very much on the table. And as you said, that would open up a spot in the bullpen for, you know, it could be a Brendan Little. Like, I think they'd be fine with carrying three lefties, honestly. Like, I think they'd like the flexibility that gives them. Could be Nate Pearson. It'll be interesting to see, like, how they look at their bullpen deployment as well, because look, it's great news that, like, Eric Swanson's back on a mound and that he is going to be ready for the start of the season, but you're not going to see Eric Swanson pitching back to backs to start the season. So if you need Swanson for like 20 pitches on opening day, you're not going to see him in game two. You might not even see him in game three. Like, the Blue Jays, he's still going to be kind of building up to that to start the year, because he was kind of behind this spring. And the Blue Jays, actually, like, before the horrific events that occurred for the Swanson family, even before that, the Blue Jays were going to bring Swanson along pretty deliberately this spring, just considering the workload he had last year. So you're going to be managing that to start the year as well. So there are a ton of little trickle down knock-on effects here to Gausman's availability.
Yeah, exactly. So we'll get a better sense. I think he's one setback away from, you know, needing to open
100%
outside of the rotation, right? So, you know, he's maybe he can thread a needle and get in there, and I think everyone involved is open to that, including Kevin Gausman, including Pete Walker and John Schneider, and seeing if that's a possibility. And yet, hey, if the prudent thing to do is to give him a little bit more time, then that's not the worst thing either. It just leaves them in a position where they're kind of vulnerable. And, you know, every team is vulnerable when it comes to pitching, but there are degrees of that. And you do not want to be in a position where you are starting the season already having eaten into your existing depth. So, you know, it's a good thing for them, like we said, that Bowden Francis is ready to roll and seems really capable of that job.
Well, and you also haven't gotten Yariel Rodriguez into a game this spring yet.
Yeah.
He's had that back issue. But this is someone else who, you know, you're counting on to be a bit of a swingman type for you this year. Obviously, he's a little bit of a project, and the Blue Jays are trying to clean up some things in his delivery, and is just trying to kind of figure out, like, what his pitch mix is actually going to be and what his approach is actually going to be going forward. Like, there is, you know, I think very much a Kikuchi arc that he is going to take, where his mechanics look a little different over time, and, you know, just like his methods, I guess, on the mound, his approach on the mound looks a little different. Like, pitching to MLB hitters is different than pitching to NPB hitters, because NPB is like just such a contact oriented environment, whereas in MLB, like, you got hitters taking shots, like, you got hitters trying to clear the fences all the time. So that impacts your sequencing, and that impacts, like, what areas of the zone you attack, and that impacts your miss profiles, and, you know, just how your catcher's set up. Like, there's a lot of things that play there for Rodriguez, and they begin with him just getting on a mound, getting into games, and getting on to like a 5-day schedule. So he's not going to be an option out of the gate for the Blue Jays, how soon he can be an option for them, like, is going to be big, especially, you know, as the Blue Jays start this season with, like, a lot of games against a lot of really good teams out of the gate. Like, you know, as much as their depth has been tested already, I think you can expect it to be tested even more once regular season games start being played.
Right, yeah, because, you know, they haven't even gotten to the beginning of this marathon season. So, of course, there are more tests coming and there will be more demand for pitchers, more opportunity for pitchers. That's where you'd love to see if you're the Toronto Blue Jays. You want to see Ricky Tiedemann in the zone and attacking hitters, and you want to see Yariel Rodriguez healthy and just showing why he was worthy or that he was worthy of that $32 million investment. But as I look at things right now, like, I see pretty much a 0% chance that Yariel Rodriguez breaks camp with this team.
Any final thoughts before we go? Anything else kind of rattling around your head here in Dunedin that you've seen? Anything off the beaten path? Any sleepers, dark horses? Anybody you want to shout out? What do you got?
You know, there's a lot rattling around in my head, but I'm not
sure.
Share
some of it with us, man. The people want to hear it. They want to hear those unadulterated BNS thoughts, man.
Exactly.
Let's hear your candid opinions.
Stream of consciousness. Yeah. No, I mean, my candid opinion is this. Like, their offense is probably a little better than I thought, and their pitching is worse than I thought. So, you know, it's the inverse of last year. And, you know, I think that the Yankees are better than them, and I think they're fighting for a wild card, and I think that they're going to have every chance to make a wild card, but they got a ton of work ahead, and like I said, I think their pitching presents real questions. So that's my honest thought on this team as a whole right now.
If I had to put you on the spot right now and say, are the Toronto Blue Jays a postseason team as presently constituted, how would you answer that question?
Right now, I'd say outside looking in. You know,
I agree,
because they have two starting pitchers who aren't off a mound. You know, like, I agree. You got to get to a point that Kevin Gausman's on a mound. You know, if Kevin, and I mean, like, in a facing hitters, I know he was off a mound for like 26 pitches or whatever. But yeah, no, like, look, if your ace is not off a mound, I'm not going to pick this team as a playoff team right now. Like, if Kevin Gausman shows he's fully healthy, then maybe that changes. And the Blue Jays certainly hope he does. If Joey Votto comes in and he's got everyone timed up and he's ready to roll, and they, you know, Vladdy's healthy and all this, Manoah starts to build up, and you're, like, there are tons of pathways for this team to be good. But as we sit here right now, no, I'm not picking them as a playoff team, because and so much of that connects to Gausman. It might be a different equation if Gausman's healthy, but their ace is on the sidelines right now. That is a huge deal.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, that's like a 5-win player right there. You remove him from the calculus, and like, that is a dramatic impact. It's like removing Bo Bichette, right? Like, it's just like it's just massive. It's just something the Blue Jays like cannot withstand, frankly. And you look at the quality of the other lineups and the other pitching staffs in the American League. Like, there are some really good teams, man. Like, a lot of the bad teams in baseball are in the NL, honestly.
Yeah.
You know, I know you got like your White Sox and your Athletics in the AL, but like, you know, over in the NL, you got like a Nationals and a Pirates and Rockies, and it's just not the same level of competition as when you're talking about like a Yankees and an Orioles and a Rays, an Astros, a Mariners, a defending World Series champion in the Rangers, a team in the Guardians that always pitches and plays in a division where they get to beat up on like the White Sox and Royals. The Tigers are going to be like this trendy sleeper pick this year. Like, wait, like, if you really look at it in the AL, and so like, let's just give the Yankees the East, let's give the Twins the Central, and let's give the Astros the West, just for purposes of the exercise. You got three wildcard spots, and you got Rays, Orioles, Blue Jays, Mariners, Rangers, and maybe a surprise team from the Central in the Guardians or Tigers, maybe. So you're talking about like at least 5, possibly 6 teams battling for 3 spots. The Blue Jays are facing a considerable challenge this year to reach the postseason. Yeah, that's without their aces status being in question entering the regular season.
Here's another unfiltered thought. Okay, so George Springer, $150 million, right? So he's hit 22 homers, 25, 21. I know there's more to life than home runs, but that's one stat for you, right? In his 3 seasons with the Jays, he hasn't hit more than 25 home runs. This would be a good year for George Springer to hit 30. to have a 30 home run season, as a $150 million player who is here to be a leader on this team, someone who was brought here because he's won a World Series before, he was supposed to be a franchise-type player for this team to join this core, this would be a great year for him to hit 30 home runs.
He led the Blue Jays in plate appearances last year. Nobody had more of an impact on the Blue Jays offense than George Springer last year. So I 100% agree with you. It's uncommon that in the back half of some of these large free agent deals for veteran outfielders that you get the best production that you've seen so far on the deal.
I'm not predicting. I'm not predicting that. I'm just because you look at the history of age 34 players. I'm just saying that this would be a good year for that to happen.
That would buck the trend if in year four of the deal, the mid-30s outfielder gives you the best season that you've seen yet. But yes, that would be a massive boon for the Blue Jays, even if they could just like get him back to a 120, 125 WRC plus. You know, last year it was 104. It's just that is not going to be good enough for the Blue Jays. Like, they're going to need more from Springer offensively. Like, credit to him for staying healthy and for playing as much as he did and, you know, playing a solid right field. But they're absolutely going to need more from him at the plate, just as they're going to need, like, Justin Turner to prove that he has one more year of Justin Turner production at 39, just as they're going to need, like, Bo Bichette to, you know, not even just be like the superstar he's already been, but maybe even take another step. Just as they're going to need Vladimir Guerrero Jr. to be more of the player that he was earlier in his career when he was an MVP candidate than he was last season when he was like, you know, a 115, 116 WRC plus kind of guy. 118, excuse me. I just pulled it up. That's good. Like, that's 18% better than league average offensively. But for someone with the potential of Vladimir Guerrero Jr., with someone with like the batted ball data that he has, with someone with the demonstrated plate discipline that he has shown coming up through the minor leagues, the Blue Jays are just going to need more from him. You know, we could sit here, we could talk about Ernie Clement going deep off of Corbin Burns and Zach Eflin, and we could talk about Joey Votto being 40 in camp and what he might still have. We can talk about, oh, you know, like Kevin Biggio could have a sneaky season. Ultimately, it's going to come down to the production of Springer, Bichette, Guerrero. Like, those are the three guys who are really going to drive this offense. They're going to make the most plate appearances on this offense, if healthy, and they are going to be the ones that can push this offense either into the, like, top five, top seven of baseball, or drag it down into the, like, 12, 13, 14 range, which likely is just not going to be good enough.
Right, yeah. And, you know, with Springer, he's been a really important player on a really good team once before. And now he's been a somewhat important player on a somewhat good team. And, you know, you would hope if you're the Blue Jays, sign this guy for $150 million, you would hope he's not okay with that. You know, you would hope that everyone in that clubhouse, regardless of their stature, is motivated to push for greater heights. And we've heard that from Bo and from Cavan. And, you know, we've heard that from lots of players in that room that they're not content. Of course, who would be content with how things have gone so far for this group? But, you know, this is one of those last chances they all get together, right? It's this year and next year. So each chance is pretty massive, and they haven't lost a game yet, so I don't want to write them off. And certainly, it's a long season, and wild, unexpected things happen on a baseball field all the time. So open to all sorts of possibilities here. But yeah, they're fragile right now because of that pitching, and yet I do like the offense. So, you know, we'll see where it all goes.
Ben, what are we going to talk about next week?
You know what? There's going to be something, that, as you know, there's always, sometimes I'm like, as you say, like the days kind of go by and it becomes a bit of a blur and it's, you know, this gradual trickle of information, but stuff always, like, we never saw the Joey Votto deal coming here. So I mean, there's going to be something.
Can we get like a Zach Greinke minor league deal? Perhaps.
Sure.
Another like 40-year-old idiosyncratic future Hall of Famer to come in and spice things up.
I just don't think that Zach Greinke is going to be quite as media friendly as Joey Votto. That's the thing. I think Joey Votto over time has become actually really media friendly. You know, we mentioned before the conversation we had with him in Cincinnati last summer. He's been great so far here with the Jays. Zach Greinke described to me as someone who is extremely difficult with the media. So I would not be, you know, that would be something where you're kind of watching him from afar.
That is not a prerequisite for me to find you interesting as a ball player. However, I would love to see Zach Greinke. Okay, minor league deal. He goes to Buffalo. Say Votto goes to Buffalo as well. I mean, you got Zach Greinke on the mound, like telling these AAA hitters what pitches he's about to throw. He's got all these crazy mannerisms that he's going through. Joey Votto's at first base. It's like 5 degrees at Salem Field. These guys are 40. And like freezing their asses off, and just like guys who are going to be Hall of Famers, nothing left to prove, could walk away now and have like completely like some of the better careers that we have seen at the big league level of this generation. Guys who are still out there like giving it, trying to get back to the big leagues, like still doing like the only thing they know how to do. Oh, it's a movie, Ben. Like, give me that in April. That's like, let's do it, please.
It's a feature article, that's for sure. I mean, a couple Hall of Famers in the minor leagues. Yeah, it would be cool. I think like when it comes to Greinke, if you took his feel for pitching and Ricky Tiedemann's stuff, then like, I mean,
oh my God.
Well, I guess then you'd have Zach Greinke in his prime, because there wasn't, I mean, Zach Greinke's stuff, you know, between the curveball and the fastball, that he would get up to 98, 99 at times in his like younger days, plus his athleticism on the mound. Like, in some ways, Zach Greinke kind of like there's nothing wrong with Zach Greinke, right? Like, when you look at his stuff, the command, the athleticism, even his ability to hit, like, there's so few flaws with Zach Greinke when he was in his prime.
Oh, totally. And two just all-time Hall of Fame speeches someday.
Yes.
Votto and Greinke. Cannot wait. But that'll be a topic for At the Letters circa 2030 or whenever that happens. We'll have votes by then, though. So Joey Votto better be nice to us.
Yeah. Well, that's
hopeful. He's Ben Nicholson Smith. I'm Arden Zwelling. Our producer this week has been Sho Ali. Thanks so much to him for stepping in. And thanks to you for listening here in the dead zone of spring training. We'll be back next week and throughout the regular season here on At the Letters.